Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation with us. John, just in one day, yesterday, we had a story of John Kelly, the White House Chief of Staff, calling the president an idiot. We had Donald Trump's personal physician from New York City say that Donald Trump's goons came and raided his office. This all stems from the doctor divulging that he prescribed Propecia, hair loss, for the president. We had Ron Rosenstein pushing back against the Tea Party caucus, who were trying to impeach him. Then we had the Robert Mueller thing. I probably should have mentioned that one first. We have Robert Mueller apparently saying, well, if you don't want to answer the questions, we can use the subpoena, which this is in one day. One day. One day. Any one of those things in any other presidency would be a landmark. This is one day.
Yeah, in any other presidency, any one of those things would probably be the critical marker that, you know, everybody noted as the kind of final stage of decline, right? You know, the end of the story, not the start of it. When you have the crazy right-wing allies of the president. Remember, Donald Trump is a conservative. He is a conservative Republican doing what conservative Republicans want done. Never miss that point. He's just like Scott Walker and these other folks. But when you have the craziest and most extreme of the Republican conservatives trying to remove the member of the Department of Justice who is essentially giving the go-ahead for an investigation, which we now find has suggested the use of a subpoena to question the president about clearly collusion and wrongdoing, impeachable offenses. Put those pieces together here, Sly. What you've got is a situation where Mueller wouldn't have talked about a subpoena if he hadn't talked to Rosenstein about a subpoena. The fact that the subpoena thing is rising at a point where Rosenstein is now suddenly under attack should not be missed. If they take Rosenstein out and replace him with someone else, then the interpretation on whether Mueller can use a subpoena on Trump could go from a positive, yes, you can, Justice Department says that's doable, to a negative, no, you can't. And so here is a fascinating, just a fascinating reality of this whole thing. I don't like Rosenstein. I think Rosenstein failed in a number of places at critical turns, and you shouldn't make him a hero. But at this point, he is the underpinning of the ability of the Mueller investigation to press its point. And so don't underestimate any of the elements that's in play right now. We're watching very big ticket stuff playing out in real time.
Much like many of the people in the Watergate that at times were heroes and at times were goats, we're dealing with complex.
Course,
we're dealing with,
yeah.
All right, here's Rod Rosenstein yesterday speaking at this conference about separation of powers.
But I can tell you, there have been people who have been making threats privately and publicly against me for quite some time. And I think they should understand by now the Department of Justice is not going to be extorted.
At what point is this effort to impeach him, impede him, obstruct him, or the FBI director or Mueller? At one point, is the separation of powers with these members of the House cross the line that they are complicit in a conspiracy to protect the president's criminal behavior?
Well, you see, they have a right to do this, right? Don't doubt that Congress has a right to impeach. House has a right to vote to impeach someone, right? And if they want to go forward with this, I mean, there's not a legal standard that would stop them from doing that. But if they want to go forward with this, you tell me, Sly, you've used a calendar in your life, have you not?
Yes.
Okay. So if they press this point, right, and really got it, let's imagine they put the articles of impeachment down, they get a vote on the floor of the House on this in, I don't know, May, June of a midterm election year that forces every Republican in the House to take a stand on whether to remove the guy, the very quite conservative, very boring Justice Department guy who is the kind of critical linchpin as regards an investigation of the president. You know what I would say?
Go for it.
Welcome to it. Go for it. Yeah, you go right ahead.
Okay, but
and you press your point.
But you still, they may have the legal right to do this, but
right. But yes, it's a collusion of another kind.
Okay, yeah. But what about their intent? If their intent is to have checks and balances, or they think people have overstepped their line, that's one thing. It's much like the president has the right to fire the FBI director, but the president, mm-hmm. if he has the wrong intent, he can get in trouble for firing the FBI director. Does the same?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. At what point?
I mean, I hate to tell you. Yeah. Proving intent is hard, but the point you're trying to make is a very important one. If you were to get paperwork, right, showing that Trump conspired with, say, Devin Nunes or some of these other figures, Jim Jordan, the guy the right-wingers want to replace Ryan with, or Ryan himself, any of these people, if there was any collaboration to shut down a legitimate inquiry, right, then you would have, you know, potentially an issue for examination. The problem is, and I hate to tell you this, Sly, do you know who examines wrongdoing by members of the House?
The House.
Yeah, you know. So barring a transfer of money, you know, something that really got you into the major legal items, you know, your intent thing here gets a little bit shaky. But I'm going to give you a name, and you alone, and, of course, the brilliant listeners to this podcast, you know, some of them will know it too, but not a lot of people. Charles Sandman. Charles Sandman.
I don't know who Charles Sandman is.
Okay.
Is he a former House member?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You've told this story before.
He was the last stalwart. He's like the true stalwart for Nixon.
For Nixon.
Right? Defended Nixon to the end and, you know, really went and used, you know, congressional and legal strategies to try and defend Nixon. And in a very short amount of time, he was destroyed politically, having been, by the way, somebody who was in a safe Republican seat, a senior conservative. You know, I mean, he had plenty of things going for him. If there's anybody who could have just ridden Watergate out by keeping his head down, because he's actually quite beloved by New Jersey conservatives. In fact, they nominated him for governor and stuff like that. But he just crashed and burned politically, and it was all about, you know, like picking loyalty to the White House over the system of checks and balances, over separation of powers. And it was so evident that this guy was serving in Congress not as a representative of New Jersey, but as a representative of the Nixon White House, that it wrecked him politically, never to come back, never to. You know, have a future there.
All right.
What I would tell you is that Republicans who do this at this point should be genuinely conscious of something that I think people forget. America was as divided in 1974 as it is today. There's some fantasy that says, oh, yeah, we're so much more divided now. I'm sorry. No. There were deep, deep divisions then. I mean, literally the country had been, you know, torn by, you know, student dissent, anti-war, the challenges of the civil rights movement, racist responses to it, you know, all sorts of stuff. You're taking out a president who had just won re-election with 60% of the vote. The people who stood with Nixon ended up ultimately being held to account. And I, again, I invite these people to do this sort of thing if they want. Let's get their names. Let's get all their names on a nice list.
All right, let's go
Hopefully
to...
John Duffy will be on that list.
Let's go to this.
Fruitful, and they want more stuff, and they need more time.
This is not good news for Donald Trump. What they are looking to do is bring a major indictment in which Flynn is going to be one of the star witnesses.
Well, that, as they say, gets your attention, and let's bring in our leadoff panel for a Tuesday night. One of the two reporters who broke tonight's big story, Robert Costa, national political reporter for The Washington Post, moderator of Washington Week on PBS in his spare time, Julia Ainslie, NBC News national security and justice reporter, and former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance, who spent 25 years as a federal prosecutor. All right, Robert, you get to go first. Set the scene March 5th, the principles, the dynamics, the backdrop, and what ended up happening.
What a scene. And Mr. Mueller, someone who is known to be so careful with his words, has a meeting with the president's legal team, and they're having negotiations, tense negotiations, about a potential presidential interview. And as the president's lawyers continue to balk at the suggestion and say they need to have more information, Mr. Mueller brings up the possibility of a subpoena, and that gets set. President's then lead lawyer John Dowd to snap back. You're messing around with the president of the United States. And that led to the Mueller team to provide information to the president's lawyers about the areas of interest of the probe, which then led Mr. Sekulow, the president's current attorney, to compile a list of potential questions that the legal team views as things that Mueller could ask.
But I can tell you, there have been people
All right.
who have been...
So, Comrade Nichols, what do you make of the Mueller situation?
Well, I mean, I thought that was a really good sort of timeline and structural explanation by Robert Costa there, because you know that we had this initial release of these questions, right? And you're like, how did these questions? Why would Mueller, who's so secretive and so you know like a lockbox, why would these questions come out? And of course, what we realized is they came out via Trump's legal team, and they came out because of a couple of interesting aspects of that conversation there. First, this notion that the president's lawyer, on hearing about the prospect of a subpoena, right, says, oh, you're messing with the president of the United States here. Well, good, right? That's what we're supposed to do. That's, we are not a monarchy. And the president of the United States, as Thomas Jefferson suggested, is sort of one rung below a citizen. He serves the citizens. He's an employee of the citizens. And so you have every right to mess with him and to demand accountability in that. And so that lawyer there, John Dowd, was a ridiculous man, right? And his statement was a ridiculous statement. But Mueller is he's a Boy Scout, an Eagle Scout. He's the guy who dots every I and crosses every T. And so there's a challenge to this. They're saying, you know, these Trump lawyers, so-called lawyers, are saying, oh, well, you're messing with the president. This is some sort of political thing. It's unfair. So Mueller goes back and clearly, you know, details for the Trump lawyers the things he wants to talk about. And they are substantive. They're real. They're serious. Obviously, any lawyer, a good lawyer or a bad lawyer, takes down the list of the questions because, you know, it's all about record keeping. And so they've got this list of 49-some questions, right? And then the issue is, how did those questions surface, right? Why did they come out now? And I would argue that Trump is such a mess. He is, in fact, as unhinged as his chief of staff suggests, and that his legal team has a very, very hard time communicating with him about the importance of what all is going on here and what what really is at stake. And I don't think it's any surprise at all that these questions surfaced, right? Because I suspect it wasn't a casual leak, and that clearly didn't come directly from Trump's legal team. They've said that was the case, but somebody in the periphery of it put these questions out.
Well,
Dowd
is no longer part of the legal team. That doesn't mean he couldn't have released them, right?
Yeah, but still could a dozen other people, right? But the bottom line is that in consultation and some sort of serious thinking about all this, there was a conclusion, right, that I would argue there's a conclusion that, they don't They are not harmed by this information coming out. They're not harmed by this discussion being had, because, you know, what's going on here is a twofold thing. Number one, they're beginning to clarify the situation, right? Clarify what all's at stake here. That's healthy for everybody involved. B, they are also, I think, communicating to the president, this isn't a small matter. And remember, the president's legal team has just changed again, right? And, you know, remember for a while there, he was like looking at mall lawyers from out of Georgia. You know, it was really a stunningly tragic legal team. But, you know, of late, he has started to bring in, you know, some people who actually, I think, have some sense of what's going on here. And yet I don't think he has a sense of how serious it is. And that's my suspicion, is that the team didn't mind that the president will be briefed on the questions he may face by Fox News, right? If they can't communicate directly to the president and get him to focus on what's at stake, let the questions float.
This is the man.
So that's speculation.
This is the man that the Iran deal is in his hands. The North Korean situation with Kim Jong-un is in his hands, if that meeting ever takes place. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. That's a really frightening prospect.
Yeah, but why does it, the thing that you got to put in the mix, right, is that on the same day, say a couple days, that all this legal shenanigans are playing out, and of course, we'll find out the real story, you know, years from now when people write books, but as all these legal shenanigans are playing out and all the shifts in the legal team and suddenly leaks occur and all this stuff like that, same day, we've got this deep discussion about John Kelly, the chief of staff.
All right, why don't we pick it?
We'll call the president an idiot.
We'll take a break there. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at slysoffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. All right, so let's pick it up. John Nichols from the Capital Times with us. This John Kelly situation, he's not long for his job. Evidently,
he's on the Tillerson track.
He's on the Tillerson track. Evidently, the president wanted to move him over to VA secretary. He doesn't want that job. So I think he's going to make the president fire him.
And that's, you know, fine. He's
a horrible man. John Kelly is a horrible man.
He was, and you know what the weird part about it is? If you go back and you check Sly Podcast, right? The day his name was mentioned for this position, we talked about what a disaster he would be in the job. There was never any question. And what amazed me was the absurdity of the discussion about, you know, whether John Kelly was going to come in and stabilize the White House or get it on the right track or make things work right in the White House. That was never, ever possible because, A, John Kelly is a right-wing ideologue who actually believes many of the things that Donald Trump believes. So he's not somebody who's going to temper Donald Trump on the bad policy. But B, there is zero evidence that John Kelly is good at running things, right? Now, in the military, when he was there, he had a good track record, not one I necessarily always agreed with, but he had a good track record. You have to diminish the guy's military service. But as he's moved into governing, right, there's just not an evidence that this guy, you know, is good at taking over a political operation or a policy operation. And so you knew from the start, you knew this was going to be problematic. And in some ways, it's not Kelly's fault. I mean, I dislike Kelly on policy. I also do not think he's good at what he does. But the fault of it lies with Donald Trump. Donald Trump has historically established loyalty by paying people to be loyal to him, right? Now he's in the federal sector where pay is good for any working American, but where it's not sufficient to pay somebody to put up with Donald Trump. And so by the nature of it, he's going to burn through these people. It's only a matter of time. And then he's going to move new people in. And the word around the White House, of course, is that he has, you know, burned through Kelly. And now, you know, it's Kudlow and, you know, John Bolton and some of these other newcomers to the White House who he's all enamored of. He's taken his cell phone back. He's talking to them all the time, right? Or he's talking to, you know, another circle of people. And I can tell you this, two things about Donald Trump that are absolute certainty. He burns through people who try to maybe try in some way to guide him a little bit. Two, he then recycles people he has fired. And if you don't think Scaramucci and Bannon are going to be back in this White House soon, you're crazy. Because they will be.
Let's talk about loyalty. Dr. Harold Bornstein, who was President Trump's or then Donald Trump's physician for many years. Interesting timing of this.
President's longtime doctor, his personal physician here in New York, Dr. Harold Bornstein, tells NBC News that in February 2017, Trump's personal bodyguard and a Trump Organization lawyer showed up at his office just after 7 a.m., took all the president's medical records. In an exclusive interview with NBC News, the doctor describes this incident as a raid.
What exactly were they looking for?
All his medical records, his pictures, anything they could find. We must have been here for 25 or 30 minutes. We created a lot of chaos. I feel raped. That's how I feel. Raped, frightened, and sad.
Well, there we go. That seems pretty normal, doesn't it?
Without a doubt, sad.
Okay, so they asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders about this.
Bornstein believes he is the victim of a theft here and that the crime was committed in his office. He believes the records were raided because he publicly mentioned, as the New York Times reported in its headline at the time, that he prescribed Propecia to the president to promote hair growth.
Why did Keith Schiller, who was a White House employee at the time, go and take medical records from the president's personal doctor last year?
As a standard operating procedure for a new president, the White House medical unit took possession of the president's medical records.
It was characterized as a raid. Is that your understanding of what happened? The doctors seemed to be pretty upset about it.
No, that is not my understanding.
Standard procedure. According to the doctor, they took the pictures off the wall and did this when the receptionist was there at 7 in the morning.
Number one, what are all these people doing there at 7 in the morning? That's a little troublesome. But, isn't that how you transfer your medical records?
When I went from UW Health to SSM, yes, I broke into my doctor's office.
You're a strong-arm guy, right? You go in there with a lawyer, you know, and I'd like to know the name of the lawyer, right? That would be good. But you get a strong-arm guy, you go in there with a lawyer, you kind of like burst in, you take stuff. You know, and then you exit, right? And then, I guess, where do you put the records then? That's the next question.
You know, if David Chase, you know, the writer for The Sopranos, if he'd come up with this plot and...
Oh, it's getting good. Yeah.
And put it on the desk of the executives of HBO, do you think they'd buy it?
I mean, yeah, it would be like, what would it be, like Mob President, you know, or something like that, or something, I don't know.
But all these, yeah, Michael Cohen and... This doctor, and then this Ronnie Jackson, all these people, it's just crazy.
Well, I loved the, you know, my favorite, if we can just do a moment on Ronnie Jackson, right? Because they're all busy defending Ronnie Jackson. They're saying, oh, yeah, this guy, he's, you know, all these presidents liked him. Well, presidents do like a doctor who curries to their favor, who shows up whenever they need anything, and basically does whatever they ask him to do. That's not overly surprising, but what's fascinating...
I would have liked Dr. Ronnie Jackson. Yeah.
You would have loved Dr. Ronnie Jackson.
The Candyman. The Candyman.
Yeah. But when they're trying to mount this weird defense of him, after he's withdrawn his nomination, he's refused to defend himself, right? So he's withdrawn his nomination, and, you know, after he's apparently leaving the White House now, right? You know, so all these things happen. They're saying, oh, no, well, he was treated unfairly. Okay, and they mount this whole campaign, And some of the things that were charged on him may or may not have occurred. Obviously, there's a list of complaints, and some things may be overinterpreted, underinterpreted, whatever. But as they're mounting this campaign to defend Ronnie Jackson, like within a day, suddenly there comes a leak from the White House, apparently, and from, you know, whether it's directly or people who know about, the vice president's office. And it turns out Ronnie Jackson was in some sort of nasty fight with the vice president's personal physician, to an extent where the vice president's personal physician was complaining about intimidation and, you know, like some sort of pressure as regards medical records and all these things as regards treatment of the vice president's wife. I mean, this, when you start to, you know, kind of peel this thing back, what you see is just, I think what you see is what happens among the super rich. And that is, they buy the treatments they want, they buy the approaches they want, they literally buy a world in which they get what they want. And the problem for Trump is he doesn't understand that when you become president of the United States of America, you can't keep operating that way. And you can't just take the guy who is your, you know, personal physician, or basically your personal, run around the White House and say, you should run the VA.
I'm not sure many rich people have done this.
You may recall it was this Dr. Bornstein who publicly issued a letter December of 2015 in which he said candidate Trump's recent lab results were, quote, astonishingly excellent. The letter went on to draw a conclusion that was both nowhere close to the truth and impossible for Dr. Bornstein to assess. It was this portion that got the most attention, quote, if elected, Mr. Trump, I can state unequivocally, will be the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency. Now, over 2 years later, Dr. Bornstein told CNN tonight, candidate Trump dictated that letter over the phone himself.
I will also tell you that that letter that showed up in the Times about his health, he wrote himself. You know that.
Yeah.
He wrote it himself. And me, from where I come from, the end of it was just black humor. It wasn't meant to be a serious comment. Mm-hmm. I guess people don't have that sense of humor.
Yeah.
But I have that sense of humor.
You feel like you're something like that last line, like you're sitting at the end of a bar. I got that kind of sense of humor. I'm a funny guy.
Oh, my God. You know?
Well, first off, this doctor, I mean, it's like the doctor is sort of convenient at this point because he's saying things that are interesting, but no one should ever be deluded into thinking this guy is anything less than a disaster, right? You know, I mean, this guy is a really awful player. And so you ask yourself, how did Donald Trump find him, right? But with the Yellow Pages, where do you find a doctor like this who basically is willing to take dictation from a candidate for president of the United States and then put that out as official, as an official review of the candidate's medical records at a time, by the way. Now, and remember, these people at the same time were running, the Trump people, a clear campaign suggesting that Hillary Clinton had severe health problems. Right? And she got, you know, she was exhausted one day or had some flu or something, and she fell down on, you know, after a 9/11 thing. And they spun this stuff into, you know, Hillary Clinton's on the verge of, you know, some sort of health catastrophe. And then at the same time, they were creating a lie. And the candidate himself was in the middle of it. And so I'll ask you this one last question, putting all the healthcare stuff in a box there, right? In fact, they were lying about Hillary Clinton. They were lying about Trump. Let us step back here and ask ourselves, do you really believe that a guy who would dictate his health record in this fantastical, absurd way wasn't somehow in contact with oligarchs and players in Russia? I mean, you know, these are very different things. I know we're looking at different tracks here. But when you hear something like that, doesn't it make you think, yeah, you know, kind of the wilder things we've heard in the Steele memo and stuff like that, I think we better put them in the realm of believability, or at least possible believability.
Absolutely remarkable. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.